Well, good morning, everybody. Happy weekend. I hope your week was, you know, spectacular. But honestly, I hope you saved some of yourself for the weekend, that you budgeted. You know, you got to save that energy so that by the time you hit the weekend, when you finally got time for you and your family and the things around your home, hopefully you haven't, you know, spent all of your energy during the week. Hopefully you have a nice big reserve on hand for everything you're going to do today. Now, I know for me and my family, we saved up a ton of energy because we're going strawberry picking. And everybody in the family is super pumped about that, except one kid. Hannah does not love fruit picking of any kind. It just takes too long, and she wants to do other things that she deems more fun. And that would be fine, except for the fact that Hannah really has a skill, a spiritual gift, let's say, for letting us all know that she's not having fun and making sure that she drains and sucks the life out of whatever fun we're having if she's not having fun. So we've got to be prepared for that. So I've saved up a ton of energy to handle that. And of course, I'm exaggerating just a tiny little bit. Anyway, you're listening to the Repco Light Home Improvement Show, sponsored by Benjamin Moore. And on top of this being a strawberry picking weekend, it's also Father's Day weekend. So at the end of the show, I want to talk about some life lessons that my dad taught me. And don't worry, this is not sappy. My dad is nuts. And so the life lessons are very bizarre, and I think they're kind of funny. So we're going to get to that at the end of the show. I'm also going to be talking with interior designer Andy Yates. And coming up next, I'm going to be looking at a project that we get asked about all the time: painting your kitchen cabinets, painting your bathroom cabinets, how to do it. I'm going to spin you through that project briefly and then talk about a resource that I've got for you if you're thinking about jumping into something like that. But right now, through the magic of recorded radio, let's go to the conference room at Village Custom Interiors in Byron Center, where I recorded an interview earlier in the week. Now, Village Custom Interiors, if you're not familiar, it's a flooring, tile, and cabinet showroom. They offer remodeling and new construction materials to homeowners, to builders, to remodelers, to designers, pretty much everybody. And like I said, they're located in Byron Center, and they serve the greater Grand Rapids area and a lot of West Michigan. Now, today I'm here in their conference room, and I'm going to get some of your cabinet questions answered, because that's one of the things they do here. And to help me get those answers, I'm joined by Mark Prime. Mark, thanks for being here.
Absolutely. My pleasure.
Now, Mark, the questions that we're going to be going through are questions that I've been getting via email, phone call, all kinds of different ways people are sending in their questions. And I'm giving out $25 RepcoLite gift certificates to the people who ask me questions that I actually use on the air. And so all the people that we talk about, they're getting gift certificates. If you have a question, it doesn't have to be about cabinets. It doesn't have to be about paint. It can be about any home improvement topic. Send those questions to me at radio@repcolite.com, and then I'll find the right experts to get those answers, and then we'll air them on a future episode. And if I do, you'll get a $25 gift certificate to RepcoLite. So it's all worth it. You get your question answered, and you get fun money for paint. All right, let's get to the questions that we've got. The first question is from Jesse. And when redoing a kitchen, Jesse wants to know, is it better to replace my flooring before or after the cabinets are installed? So do I do that before cabinets or after cabinets? What do you think?
Yeah, this is a great question. Typically, we recommend that you would replace the cabinets first. There's less chance of damage to the flooring. And also a lot of flooring, there's different applications. It could be floating flooring. It just needs room to, you know, contract and expand. So it's better to do it that way. Also, if you do have to replace a damaged floorboard down the road, it's easier to get it out if it's not trapped underneath the cabinet.
So a lot of the times the flooring's not installed under the cabinets at all.
Right. That's correct.
It's just come up to the cabinets.
Yep. It stops short, and then there's, you know, moldings and trim pieces like shoe molding that would cover any gaps.
So even a hardwood flooring.
Correct.
Vinyl flooring.
Yep. All of them.
All the way up to the cabinets.
Yep. So, I mean, people have installed cabinets on top of flooring. You can do that.
Yeah.
It's not the recommended way.
Yeah. I had a house where that was the case. It was all installed all the way through. I didn't do it because I would never have spent that extra money. Right? Certainly not. I would have asked that question. So you're saying do the cabinets first.
Yes.
Get all of that figured out. So Jesse, get that figured out. Whatever you're going to do with those cabinets, if you want custom cabinets, or maybe you're going to do them yourself, maybe you're just going to repaint. If you're going to repaint, there's not a big deal, but you got to figure it out first, then move on to that flooring choice.
Correct.
All right. Let's go to a question from Mallory. And I really like this one. I like them all. I love all these questions. I'm not picking favorites, but if I had to, I like this one a lot. My kitchen is pretty small and it doesn't have enough storage. I live in that zone, Mallory, so I'm resonating with this. My kitchen is pretty small. I don't have enough storage. Is there some magic that you can do to help me get more storage into a small space? Or are there just some kitchens that really can't be improved with new cabinets? And I know, this is how I talk. I assume what she's getting at is, do you guys have some sort of design magic that you can do to help us figure out how to eke the most storage out of these spaces? Or are you going to just duplicate what I've got there? I know you've got something. What's that magic look like?
Well, that's the nice thing about Village is we offer full design service. So we can come out to your house. If you want to match your existing footprint, we can do that. And then we can start to offer up some design solutions. An option might be extend the cabinets up to the ceiling so you have some extra storage above your current cabinets. There's other cabinets where they sit on the countertop and they would be between your countertop and your upper cabinets. An example of that would be an appliance garage, but there's also several other ways you can...
An appliance garage?
Yeah, it's just a smaller cabinet where maybe you have a toaster or a Keurig and you want to just, you know, find a space for it so it's not out on the countertop.
Do they have little sliding doors?
Yep, like there's tamper doors. There's pull-up doors. You can actually get cabinets with drawers that sit on the countertop. So there's a lot of different solutions.
I get a clicker for it, like a garage clicker? I can click it and it'll open the door for where my toaster's at. I'm sure that's possible.
It's probably. I know we have waste baskets that, you know, you push them and then there's a servo motor in it and it automatically...
Oh, it doesn't just... It pulls it in. It's motorized.
It's motorized.
That's the garbage.
So you could, if your hands are full, you could maybe, you know, bump it with your knee and then that waste basket will extend out and it's hands free.
Wow. So I'm sure I could get my garage door opener for the toaster garage, right?
Exactly.
So there's appliance garages. I was just hung up on the term and I wasn't going to be able to focus on anything else you said until I got that answer.
Sure.
And that made sense. The minute you started to explain it, I've seen that before. All right, so a lot of different options. You guys come out, you've got design software you're using to
put
these things
together? Yeah, we have design software. We have several cabinet lines, and each of them offer different solutions. So, for example, you might have a Lazy Susan in the corner. Well, now Lazy Susans, you can get different pullouts. There's other cabinets where you can get toe kick drawers. So there's design solutions that maybe offer better ways to utilize the same space. If you don't want to, you know, expand your kitchen or, you know, do a full-blown remodel on your house.
So how does that process work? I guess what I'm curious about is I didn't know about the appliance garages. I wouldn't have even known to ask about that. The Lazy Susan things you're talking about. I guess you guys, I'm assuming you come out, you talk to me about what my needs are, and then you guys brainstorm it and you come back with some ideas and you can walk me through all the things that are available out there to help me figure out the best way to go?
Yeah. Sometimes people will come in and we'll say, you know, what's your wish list? What are you trying to achieve? And that gives us a starting point. You know, then we'll take measurements. They can come back in. We can go through the cabinet drawings, offer some more options. The software is pretty advanced now. So let's just say you have a 15-inch base cabinet. I can click one button and it'll give me all the different 15-inch base cabinet options available, whether it's pull-out shelves, utensil drawers. It's just kind of endless what you can do now.
And you can walk me through all of those options and we can pick and choose what we want to do?
Yep, absolutely.
All right.
The software is pretty interactive too. You know, we can do virtual, you know, 3D drawings where you can kind of turn the kitchen and look at it in different ways. It just helps a lot to visualize.
So as a customer, am I looking at it on paper, on printouts, or am I looking at it on a screen where I can turn it around and look at it from different angles too?
We do a little bit of both. I mean, the best way to do it is on the screen because then I can turn the kitchen and you can look at it from different ways, from above, straight on. But sometimes paper drawings are the best. You can mark them up.
Okay.
It's easier to walk through.
But we get both.
Yeah.
We get both. All right. I'm at Village Custom Interiors in one of their conference rooms. Is this one or the conference room?
This is the conference room.
This is the conference room. I'm going to mess around with your drawers later and maybe look for pens or things like that. You've got a great big board with all kinds of post-it notes organized. I've debated moving those around, but I would never do that because that would be the actions of a rascal, and I'm certainly not that. But anyway, I'm here with Mark Prime from Village Custom Interiors. We're working through your questions about cabinets. And right now, Mark, I've got a question of my own. I want to talk about custom cabinets. And what I want to know is how long from, you know, start to finish does this process take?
Well, I'll start by saying we have about six cabinet lines in our showroom that we typically work off. They have all prepackaged pricing and catalogs, but we do run into situations where custom cabinets are a better fit. It might just be due to the size of your kitchen, some specific ideas that you want to incorporate, maybe finishes, wood species. So when people want to go down the road of custom cabinets, we're happy to do that. Initially, we would kind of have a design consultation, maybe put together a preliminary drawing with a preliminary quote and say, is this in the ballpark of what you're expecting? And if it is, then we would take the next step, do full architectural drawings, start to fine-tune some of those details. It could be several rounds of revisions. The nice thing about custom is you can literally make any cabinet any size. Normal cabinet lines, the cabinets come in 3-inch increments, whereas custom cabinets, you know, if you want an 8.5-inch wide cabinet, no problem. And then the other nice thing is you can do any finish. A lot of our cabinet companies will have maybe 6 painted colors to choose from. Custom, it's limitless, whatever color you want. Luckily, next door to our showroom is Repco Light, and so a lot of people will walk over there and grab paint samples. It's kind of a nice way to keep everything in one spot.
It's really unique. You got to, it's a doorway.
Yeah.
It leads into the next building, and the next room is Repco Light. People yep. are looking at color chips and then coming back here.
Yeah, it works great for both of us.
Yeah, we love it. So, all right. So that custom process, how long do you think that takes? Let's say it takes a couple of revisions and all of that, and then you've got to build, finish, get them installed. Are we looking at a couple months? Are we looking at longer than that?
I would look at the design process would typically take, you know, 2 to 3 weeks on the low end. If you get really elaborate and you do several rounds of revisions, I would add a few more weeks for sure. Once we have approval to go ahead, and that might involve, you know, approving the stain color, the door sample, the layout and all the details. We require 50% down, and then basically it gets sent into production. It really depends on the pipeline that our cabinet shop
sure.
has, but I would guess it's probably going to be 4 to 6 weeks to get the cabinets built and finished. And then installation is probably on the low end a couple days, on the high end a week to get them installed.
Sounds good. That's a lot of questions answered, Mark. If our listeners want to get in touch with you, and some of these folks are on the east side of the state, there's places that do the same type of thing in your area. Just do your groundwork, ask the questions, make sure they've got a staff that's going to handle it and, you know, walk you through everything you need to know. Just ask the questions. You've got a little bit more information now, so you know what to ask. If our listeners here on the west side want to get in touch with you, Mark, how's the best way to reach out to Village Custom Interiors?
I just Google Village Custom Interiors. Call the main line, ask for me, and I'll get you in touch with our designer or myself, and we'll take it from there.
Perfect. Sounds great. Mark from Village Custom Interiors, thanks for letting me hang out here and ask you a bunch of questions.
Absolutely.
Now, all right, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we'll be talking about painting your kitchen cabinets. We just talked about new ones. If that's not in your budget, let's talk about what we can do to make yours look better. That's all next. Stick around. All right, let's try a little experiment here. Look around your house right now. The inside of the house, of course. If you're not at the house, if you're driving somewhere, just use your imagination. Picture your living room, your bathrooms, your bedrooms. Picture your kitchen. You know, picture all of those things. Get them in your mind and then ask yourself this. What of all of these things would I like to change the most? Now, I'm betting, I'm going to make a prediction, many of you answered kitchen cabinets. You're listening to the Repco Light Home Improvement Show, sponsored by Benjamin Moore. And I know what it feels like to want to change those kitchen cabinets, you know, to want to change them so bad you can almost taste it. We were just speaking with Village Custom Interiors, and they're a great resource. If you're in West Michigan and you're looking to install new cabinets, reach out to experts like that. And man, who knows what your kitchen's going to be looking like? It's going to be amazing. But some of us, you know, we just don't have the budget right now for that. I just had this week a new furnace and air conditioner installed, so I barely have a budget for groceries anymore, much less cabinets. Now, I'd love new cabinets, and, you know, knock on wood, that day is going to come, but right now, I've got to get by, and maybe that's you as well. And like I said at the beginning, I know a lot of people are constantly thinking about changing their cabinets. And I know this is true because I get the emails all the time. You know, emails from people who are asking me what it takes to paint them. What does the process look like? They're asking if they're going to look good when they're painted, if the paint's going to hold up, if it's a good DIY project, you know, all of those things. Well, if you've got old stained and varnished cabinets that you no longer love, this really is a project that's going to produce epic results for you. And I'm speaking to me here, too. I've got to jump into something like this. I've got to get over it. It's a great DIY project. It's time-consuming. You know, I think that's really the reason I haven't jumped into it yet. But it's not complicated. And when you use high-quality paints and tools, you end up with great results that will hold up for years and years. You know, nothing is going to change how you feel about your kitchen for less money than painting your cabinets. You know, think of all the wall space that they take up. I can't even imagine, I can't come up with a percentage, but I have so much 80s oak in my kitchen that nothing else I do in there really matters, or there's not even a lot of options to do other things. Once I update those cabinets, the sky's the limit. Well, my budget's the limit, but the options and directions I can go with the space will seem endless compared to where I'm at now. So, what does the project look like? You know, I don't have a lot of time right now to go into it, but I want to give you the steps in a nutshell. And, you know, a lot of the times just knowing what it looks like helps you get over that hump and jump in because it's really not that bad. All right. First step, wash everything down with a good degreaser. Use TSP, you know, trisodium phosphate or Challenger or Spray 9. All of those are products that we sell at any Repcolite location. Dawn dish soap, you know, that quite honestly works pretty well too. Wash everything down to remove surface contaminants, grease, hand oils, things like that. All of that needs to be gone before you proceed. All right, so do that washing. The next step, second big step, scuff sand everything and then rinse the surface. Now, a lot of people hate this step, but it's not as bad as you might be thinking. You're going to want to use a 180 grit sandpaper and you're lightly sanding that surface. This is quick. If you're taking longer than 45 seconds or so a door, you're doing too much. You just need to create a profile for your primer to stick to. So do that scuff sanding. Next, prime the surface. We recommend Styx from Insulex. It's a water-based bonding primer. It clings to surfaces like nothing I've ever seen before, and it's going to give your finished paint a great surface to bond to. So prime them. Then after the primer dries, you do a quick sanding to knock down any raised areas, wipe the surface clean, and then apply your first coat of finish paint. Benjamin Moore's ScuffX or Advance are great options. Optima from Repcolite, another great option. Once that's done, let that paint dry, do another quick light sanding with a 220 grit paper, and then apply your second coat. Now, there's a lot more detail that I could go into, but it's early in the morning. I've got instead a step-by-step PDF with all of the details and, you know, product recommendations that you'd need if you want to tackle a project like this. Just email me at radio@repcolite.com, mention cabinet painting how-to in the subject line, and I'll send it your way. And if you're painting, you know, bare wood or painted cabinets, I've got specific how-to sheets for those as well. Just tell me what you're working on, and I'll send you the info. And then from there, you'll have everything you need to get moving, or at least to decide if this is a project that you want to tackle. All right, here's another question for you. We started with a question. We're going to end with a question. How do you feel about wallpaper? Do you like it? Do you love it? Do you hate it? Do you detest it? Do you loathe it? When we come back, we'll be in the studio with Andy Yates from Andy Yates Design, getting his take on wallpaper. And then after that, you're going to get my deep thoughts on Father's Day. So you're going to want to hang around for all of that. It's all just ahead. Stay right there. And we're back. You're listening to the Repcolite Home Improvement Show, sponsored by Benjamin Moore. And right now I'm in the studio with Andy Yates from Andy Yates Design. Andy, thanks for being here.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me, Dan.
Now, we've got another installment of our designer Q&A. And Andy, shall we just jump right in? I'll let you give out contact information and all that at the end. Does that sound good?
Sounds wonderful, Dan. Let's
all do right.
it.
This is from Jessica in Muskegon. What is the most interesting use of wallpaper you've seen in any of your projects?
So I love wallpaper in general. Wall coverings are phenomenal. They have so many varieties of texture and color and pattern. They're so versatile. And I've never really moved away from them. I know some people feel that their popularity is cyclical. But in the world of higher end residential and especially commercial, where it's almost a given you need to protect walls because in public spaces they get beat up and you don't want to be constantly touching up paint or drywall issues when you could avoid that with maybe a vinyl wall covering, right? Which is also applicable in a commercial setting because we have to meet fire codes mm-hmm. and standards. In a residential world, I do love papering ceilings. I think that's a great way with beautifully painted walls to add interest and depth to a room, to make it feel taller because you're drawing the eye up to something. Again, with wallpaper, it's very similar to fashion or any art. Do you enjoy a lot of dynamicism and movement and pattern and color, or are you looking for something more subtle and textured? So I find a lot of inspiration looking at the work of other designers. I love to see how they incorporate paper into projects on not only wall surfaces, but in cabinetry and furniture elements. I've papered, I used a wood veneer that was stained kind of blue. You can see this on my website, on a custom credenza I created for a client's foyer, and we had used lime wash on the walls. So they were very deep and textured mm-hmm. and a kind of taupey brown. But it was really fun to be able to take that wood veneer and instead of using something that was traditional as a species, we applied that to the doors. I recently, in a project in Douglas, used paper, floral paper in a mudroom laundry room above a wainscot. And again, I'm a big fan of not stopping paper at a ceiling unless there's a crown. I feel like if the walls meet the ceiling, with just a drywall corner, it's great to carry it up onto the ceiling. It does make rooms feel taller. And again, like you can see a lot of examples of that. It often throws people for a loop, but I'm telling you, it creates this fully immersive experience in a space where you really don't understand where walls quite stop and ceilings begin. And that's why it does feel so immersive. And I just love the way that that makes a space alive.
So you bring it up, you're saying, just straight over the whole ceiling.
Yeah, yeah. Oftentimes, especially when there's no crown, because how perfect is that
edge? Yeah, the crown
breaks
it.
How level and how perfect is that ceiling to wall edge in any project? So if you stop a paper there or even a paint color instead of carrying it up, it really jars the eye. It's a hard edge. And if it isn't level, you're going to notice, especially if there's high contrast with like a lighter ceiling and a darker paper or vice versa. And again, lighter ceiling, darker paint, it's sort of applicable in both ways. And, you know, when you do have a crown, when you do have a trim, it's easy to stop. But in that instance, just taking it right up, it just really transforms the aura of the space. Like you have this fully encompassing kind of jewel box feeling, especially in a powder room. Or a room where you want to surprise and delight in that way. And yeah, it's just a fantastic application. I would highly recommend. You can see instances of how this is on my website. You can also Google, papered ceilings.
Get a look at it. Yeah. We've talked about it. The application of it isn't always straight up easy, but the results are pretty amazing. I mean, a lot of bang for your buck with the results.
And it's another project where I would caution a DIY approach because paper can be so specific to cut, to pattern match, to glue properly, to clean up right afterward. And I know that I have installers that do paper ceilings and I have some that have sort of bowed out of that because it's very laborious work it's challenging, right? But again, the results are worth it 100%.
All right, Andy, that's all the time we've got for this. If our listeners want to get in touch with you, reach out to you, check out your website, because I know you've got a lot of photos, blogs out there, all kinds of different stuff. How's the best way to get in touch?
You can find our website at andyyatesdesign.com, and we are also on all of the socials at Andy Yates Design. So Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, Pinterest. We do try to keep all of those updated with fresh new content. And I'm very excited to photograph several projects this summer. So we will have a really great portfolio expansion with wonderful new content for 2024.
All right. Awesome. I'll put links in the show notes so people can check it out. Andy, thanks for hanging out today.
Thank you, Dan. It's been great.
All right, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, deep thoughts from me on Father's Day, life lessons my father has taught to me. And don't turn the radio dial thinking this is going to be sappy stuff. Maybe it will be a little. Who knows? I don't know how you interpret sappy, but it should be pretty fun because my dad's a nut. We'll get to that in just a minute. Stick around. Well, it's Father's Day weekend this weekend, and I figured I would take a break from all of the home improvement stuff so I could talk about the stuff that really matters, the stuff that touches the heart. But, as I've said all along, don't worry, this is not going to be sappy, at least not entirely. You're listening to the Repco Light Home Improvement Show, sponsored by Benjamin Moore, and I want to talk about some of the life lessons that I learned from my dad. Now, I've got a ton, an absolute ton of lessons that I've learned from dad. But not all of them are things that should be discussed on the airwaves. You know, I've got to be a little bit prudent here. But I have picked some things that I think are really important and funny and can definitely help all of us be better people. All right, for example, Dad taught me by the example he set forth. He taught me never to argue or try to discipline while standing there in your underpants. See, I told you this wasn't going to be sappy. Anyway, here's the scoop. Long ago, my sister had an essay to write, and of course, she procrastinated. Now, eventually, it became the evening before it was due, and of course, she was freaking out because the whole thing had to be typed and all of that. You know, no big deal, right? Well, back then, you've got to remember, you know, some of you lived back then in the dark ages, but back then, we didn't have a computer. We didn't have a home computer. We didn't even have a word processor. We were lucky to have an old-fashioned electric typewriter. You know, at least we had that. And we were also lucky to have Mom, who had actually worked in an office and could type pretty fast. So after Laura was yelled at, my sister was yelled at appropriately for procrastinating on this assignment, Mom set about typing the paper up. And that's when she found out that Laura hadn't even written the paper yet. Of course, more yelling occurred at that point. And I sat around, I remember this so vividly, I sat around, I feel like, with popcorn. I'm sure I didn't have popcorn, but I sat there and just enjoyed the show. It was marvelous. It was like fireworks on 4th of July. Anyway, around 10 o'clock or so at night, Mom starts typing. They've gotten the paper written. Now they're typing it up. The machine clacks and dings and does all the things that electric typewriters do. Does that for an hour or so. And then around 11, she's finally done. She's finished. She pulls that last paper, that last sheet off the roller of the typewriter, staples everything together, and hands them all to Dad, who's sitting in his chair. Now she told Dad, please, just proof this a minute. And then went downstairs to throw a load of laundry in the dryer or something like that. Anyway, Dad went straight to work. He was very serious about his process and about his assignment. He got out the big cutting board that we had. He sat down in his chair and then set that cutting board over the armrests. He would always do that. And he'd create a little desk in front of him. Anyway, he cracked his knuckles and went to work proofreading. Well, about 10 minutes later, Mom comes upstairs. Dad stands up, his little way too short 1980s, you know, terry cloth robe, barely reaching mid-thigh as he's standing there in his underpants. He hands Mom the paper and then starts to leave because he's going to go to bed now. That's when Mom exploded. More fireworks. Dad had written all over the paper with red ink. He'd corrected a bunch of things. He rewrote sentences and everything. It was crazy. Mom almost stroked out. She had to retype all of it because Dad had misunderstood his assignment. I remember watching all of that unfold. And, you know, Dad was standing there defending himself. He was trying to explain, to demonstrate, to argue his case. But Mom, man, she had the advantage. She had the high ground. She was dressed. She was wearing jeans and a sweatshirt. Dad was standing there in this ridiculous white terry cloth robe with blue trim and his underoos. You know, the more he started to raise his voice, you could tell the dumber he felt. It's profoundly difficult to make a good argument when you're standing there in your underwear. I learned that and I noted it and I've remembered it all my life. If I have to discipline the kids or whatever, I literally, you're going to think this is fake. It is 100% true. I will take the time to switch out of pajamas. Maybe I'll comb my hair. You know, maybe I'll brush my teeth. I'm going to get dressed for this argument. I'm dressing for success. You know, I figure if I look all right, I know I can move ahead with what I need to do. So that's one life lesson. Take that to the bank. It's going to help you out if you're ever in that situation. Another life lesson that I learned from Dad is this. You can fix anything if you're willing to try. And if you don't care if it doesn't work the same as it used to when you're done. You know, Dad fixed or tried to fix nearly everything that broke around the house. And some of the fixes were crazy. Some of the fixes were brilliant. You know, many of the fixes were little adventures that have become, you know, a part of the family story. Like the time that he fixed our old riding lawnmower. Now, I don't remember what was wrong with it. That's not important. But I do remember that part of the disassembly process to get at the offending part involved taking off the seat. Dad did that, found out what was wrong, fixed it, and put almost everything back together. Well, the next day, Mom was eager, you know, to get out there and mow. Believe it or not, she loved that kind of thing. It was her blessed break, I guess, for a few hours from the needs of us kids. Anyway, she went riding around the yard doing her thing, and we sat inside watching TV. Now, at one point, we kept hearing her driving back and forth in front of the living room window for what seemed like forever. We had the blinds pulled, and we couldn't see what she was doing. It was loud, though, and it was annoying. So we turned up the TV, and we just gutted through it. You know, sometimes you've just got to do what you've got to do to get your show in and watch I Love Lucy in the way that you want to. Well, a while later, I don't remember how long, Mom comes in. Her hair's a mess. She's got grass stains all over her shirt. Her face was streaked with dirt and sweat. She gasped out, "Did you see that?" We had seen nothing. And so she went on to explain that while rounding a corner, the seat had fallen off of the lawnmower and deposited Mom, you know, face first, on the yard. Now, this happened because Dad had never put the cotter pins holding the seat back in place. He never put them back in. And also because other safety mechanisms had been disabled for the repair work and were not re-enabled, the mower proceeded to drive around on its own all over the yard after Mom had fallen off. The steering wheel, you know, for the cherry on top of this wonderful event, the steering wheel had been jerked to one side when Mom fell off, so the mower just made big sweeping circles around the yard while Mom ran around chasing it. Hilarious story. We have laughed about that for years as a family, and I know it's kind of unfair to pick on Dad with this story. That was Dad's big mess up. You know, that's the story that we all think about. But those things didn't happen very often. Usually, he'd miracle work a motor or a stalled engine back to life. He'd fix boat motors and snow blowers and lawn equipment of all kinds. Honestly, if something went wrong at home with anything, we knew Dad would look it over, and more than likely not, he'd find a way to fix it. It's a great lesson that really, in all seriousness, I'm really, really grateful for. You know, watching him do that, seeing that he had the confidence to jump in, even when maybe he shouldn't have. You know, maybe he shouldn't have on some of these things. But he had the confidence to jump in without YouTube, without all of these resources that we've got. He jumped in and got these things fixed. And watching him do that gave me the confidence when I had my first house and I ran into that first time, you know, when the snowblower wouldn't start or the dryer quit working or the windows needed new glass and reglazing and on and on and on. He gave me the confidence by jumping in and doing it on his own. All right, a third life lesson from Dad is this one. You can find humor in every situation. And when you do, it makes life a ton better. Now, I've got a million stories, really, that demonstrate this concept, but my favorite is this. Dad was working on his model train. You know, it's something that he had all the time I was growing up. He still got it out right now. It's just something that he really poured a lot of time into, and he was working on that. I was little. I don't remember how old. Doesn't matter. He was cutting cork. He would use this, and then he'd lay it down on the table, the train table, and then he'd lay train tracks on top of that cork. While he's using a razor blade to cut it, he slips and runs the razor blade over the entire palm of his hand. I didn't look at the cut more than once, but I still remember that it was a doozy. It was something that needed stitches, of course, but Dad doesn't get stitches, just won't do it. So he asks Mom to go to the store for butterfly Band-Aids. Well, Mom rushes off. And to be fair, Mom didn't get out a lot, you know, with us kids. So this was kind of a special event, even though it was technically, you know, an emergency. At any rate, I don't remember how long it took. The family story is that it took a long time, but eventually, let's just say that, eventually Mom comes home with the Band-Aids and a whole bunch of other groceries and things like that. Anyway, Dad could have been mad, and he could have been stomping around, or I guess technically he could have bled out. But he didn't do any of those things because Dad is always looking for the humor in a situation. And he saw this as a great opportunity for a prank. So he had me upstairs watching for Mom. I remember that. And when I saw her pull into the driveway, I let him know, and he took a great big rag that he had covered with red paint and then laid down at the bottom of the steps. He threw his arms over his head, you know, and he's laying there on the ground with his feet on the bottom stair. It looked just like he'd passed out and fallen down the steps. Of course, Mom walks in, freaks out, drops her groceries all over the place. Hilarity eventually ensues. The point is, Dad taught me to find humor in life, even in the cruddy stuff, because life's full of cruddy, uncomfortable, embarrassing, mortifying, and terrible things, sad things. Finding the humor in it helps you get by, it keeps you alive, and it keeps you wanting to stay alive. So I'm always happy that he taught me that. The last lesson that I've got, that I've got time for anyway, is this one. And this is the sappy one. Get ready, get the Kleenex out. Dad taught me that family always comes first, before the career and before the money. You know, Dad worked hard, but he had regular jobs, nothing fancy. He didn't make huge piles of money. We spent most of the time, my growing up years anyway, we spent most of that time living pretty tight. We had enough money for what we needed, but there weren't a lot of extras. We didn't eat out like a lot of people did. We never had pop in the house. I remember that. That was big. When we'd go to somebody's house and they had pop, it was always, oh, it's amazing, pop. Sugar water. And we didn't have that. We didn't have a boat. We didn't have a four-wheeler. We didn't have a camper. We did have a pool. That was kind of fun. We had a pool. But the first one that we had was just a used one that somebody else didn't want. So that was life growing up, and it was still good. Dad could have pursued bigger things. He could have made a ton more money, but he didn't. And instead, he put all of us, the family, first, all the time. You know, our nights and our fun kicked into gear as kids when Dad got home. We'd play baseball and football on the yard for hours on end. We had armies of plastic soldiers. And then Dad and I would set them up at opposite ends of the room in the living room. And then we'd sit behind our respective little armies and we'd roll this great big steely marble, you know, back and forth, trying to knock down the other one's troops. Dad would lay on his side with his head on his elbow to kind of catch the marble as it came past. I couldn't do that. I was never comfortable doing that. You know, just, I don't know, my neck would always hurt. I was a wuss from the very beginning. So I would sit there with my legs sprawled out so that I could catch the marble. You know, that's how I did it. And Dad would zip the thing really hard, and I can still hear the sound, and I can still feel the ache when the marble would zing past my hand and hit my ankle or something, this big, deep, resounding thud, and then the pain that ensued, but it was still always fun. He'd join me outside when I was playing with my boxes and boxes of G.I. Joe figures, and he'd help me set up camps, and he'd show me where the vehicles should go and where they should park and how to camouflage everything so if the enemy would fly over, they wouldn't see it. You know, he didn't have a big title behind his name. He worked regular jobs, but he taught me that that's okay. I don't work a big job either. I don't need the big career I first thought I needed, you know, engineer, professor, whatever, writer, amazing person. I was okay to work at a paint store. It was okay to do that. It gave me the opportunity to make enough money to have a house and raise a family. And more importantly, it gave me the time to spend, you know, with the kids growing up and doing all the things with them that Dad showed me how to do. Now, there's more. I could go on and on, but that's enough. Dads and grandpas, you guys are pretty cool. They have a lot of impact on how we turn out as people, how we live. And I know not everybody's fortunate enough to have had a dad. Not everybody's fortunate enough to have had a good one. But as we have our own kids, we do have the opportunity to carry on the good stuff that we loved as kids. And if that didn't happen, we didn't get that good stuff, we can still do our best to start something new. You know, I know that's really, you know, ridiculously easy to say. I know there are a million psychological reasons that make that tough, but it's worth the battle. It's worth figuring out what you need to do to start something new. And if you did have a dad, maybe your dad, maybe a father figure, maybe a grandpa, maybe a father-in-law, maybe all of those things, if you had someone like that in your life, someone who made you who you are today, make sure you let them know. Thanks, Dad, for everything you did. I hope all you dads and granddads out there have a great Father's Day. And that's all the time we've got. If you want to catch this episode again, you can find it online at repcolite.com. Whatever you do today, make sure paint's a part of it, and I'll see you next week. I'm Dan Hansen. Thanks for listening.